Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for architecture firms. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today.
Do you think it's the experience? What would really set it apart for a young person? And he said, frankly, price.
And they had these crazy standard operating procedures.
Here we go.
I'm
pretty sure.
Ali, put on that really nice white jacket you have again.
With the really long sleeves.
Long sleeves and tie in the back, yeah.
The building industry has long been reluctant to change. When things are going well, developers and builders have had no incentive to rock the boat. But now, post-recession, a shift in society and culture has ushered in a tidal wave of change in the industry, and there's no going back. Welcome to Spaces, where we explore and analyze how the building industry is evolving, from design and construction to management and economics. Join hosts Jason, Ali, and Demetrius as they discuss the evolution of your spaces. Hello, welcome to Spaces. My name is Demetrius, here with Jason and Ali, back together again.
Back together.
I was going to sing that song, Reunited, but I'll save our listeners the pain.
Screw the listeners, I want to hear it.
Not today. So welcome back, guys. Back together again. How have you been? Ali, you were touring. How did that go?
It's no joke. I've been in the past 3 weeks to San Antonio, Denver, the Bay Area, Austin, Charlotte, and I'm leaving tomorrow morning for Tampa.
Oh my God,
dude.
So it's a lot. I feel tired. I feel like my family is, I don't know, the airport staff is more family than my actual family. So
some of those people are not very nice either.
No, that's not good. Yeah. I have trust issues.
Shouldn't say that. I'm only doing one overnighter next week. I'll probably get freaking randomly selected again, but we'll see what happens.
But the worst thing for me is being back home this weekend. We adopted a kitten on Saturday, and we got it from the Irvine Animal Care Center, and it was so exciting, and I was on my car ride home. And of course, I have like this little white 2-month-old kitten in my car. And at the stoplight, I got on my phone to text pictures to my friends. And
please tell me right next to a cop. Please tell me right next to a cop.
I get pulled over. So the guy said, he first noticed the cat. And then he goes, can you tell me while you're on your phone? And I was like, yes, because I just got a kitten. I'm so excited. And he was like, okay, I'll be back. And he came back and he's like, I understand that you're excited about your kitten and I understand that you're a red light, but here's your ticket.
Oh, so he did give you, that's like a couple $100 ticket, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm not happy about it. Actually, I was fuming about it before I went to the gym yesterday. I was like, what a jerk.
Oh man.
It's a kitten. It was a red light. I understand there's law, but I don't have any tickets. I don't have any offenses.
Really?
Really?
You don't have any tickets?
Nothing.
Oh, man.
And he was like, the good news is you're not going to get points on your license. It's like,
that
the
is good news though,
is I know you're a jerk. Gosh.
That's funny. You know, because the funny thing is every time I pull up next to a cop and they're like on their phone, I resist the urge to take a picture of them on my phone because
should.
I'm like, are you going to light me up for doing that?
And then yeah, because you just get like,
you know what I mean? But it's like, now I've got proof. You know what I mean?
So
but
annoying.
Oh, not good. I've been pulled out. Like, okay, so I've got a few points on my record. That's fine.
Oh,
it's
really?
All from speeding. Yeah, it's all from speeding.
I could see that.
Yeah, I drive with a heavy foot. Like I tell like I'm like, I don't drive reckless. I just drive with pace, right? And this last time I got pulled over, I was going out to Palm Desert, And so I get pulled over, and like I took a picture of the guy like in my side view mirror, and he totally caught me too. He goes, "Did you just take a picture?" I'm like, "Hell yeah, I took a picture." I'm like, "I'm at least get something out of this, you know?" And he was actually pretty cool about it. But I mean, literally, I got caught for going like 90 and like a 65, and that time I was hauling, like I was going right, and so I was like totally paying attention the whole way out there. Yeah. I was 2 miles from where I needed to go.
Oh.
And like a semi truck moved and freaking Smokey was on the right side on the other side. I was like, I literally pulled straight over to the shoulder.
Yeah.
Didn't even wait for him to pop lights. He full happening. On took the shoulder all the way to me. So pulled up next to me. It was just laughing when he walked up to the thing. I'm like, yeah, I'm screwed. I'm like, I know. Like, I don't even know how fast I was going, but I was booking, right? And he kind of just laughing. And he looks at me. I'm like, and no offense, man. Here's all my stuff. But like, I got to go. Like, so if we could write this up as quick as possible. Like, I literally used one of those lines like from the movie. And he wrote me up for like, I think it was something like 70 and a 65. Like he was laughing. Nice. And I'm like, I wasn't driving reckless. I know I was speeding. Like there's no, and he goes, yeah, I saw you pull straight over. I'm like, yeah, I knew I was screwed. It was pretty funny.
For me, it was very humbling. I think when I was 18 or 20, I probably could have gotten out of the ticket. And I was like, oh no, not anymore.
That's hilarious.
That's awesome. What about you?
I had a good, I've had a good couple weeks busy. Went to Vegas, started to do some
for work
studying for our podcast.
For those, since research. This is a radio show right now, Demetrius is like curling his eyes and like getting all kind of goofy look on studying, just so we're clear on that.
It's research for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's been good. But the bad thing about it, while I was gone, our dog Blue, who's sitting in studio with us, I think he ruptured another valve in his heart.
Oh. Nice.
We're dealing with that still.
What does that mean?
So they have several valves in their heart. When the valve ruptures, it basically makes it difficult for the blood flow to stop properly. When the valve closes, the blood will, you know, stop. But his doesn't close all the way. It just kind of flaps. So blood is flowing constantly and like sort of out of control.
Oh.
And the blood gets into his lungs and can drown his lungs, basically. So
that's congestive. Doesn't that cause congestive heart failure?
So that's the congestive heart failure.
Oh.
So it's sort of possibly expedited now, we're not sure. Because at this point, paying for another scan wasn't really going to do any good. They can't do anything about it at this point.
Yeah.
So we're just, managing it with his meds.
Giving him as much love as possible.
Yeah. So that's why he's in studio today.
He's chilling.
Yeah.
Oh.
So if you hear a bark, listeners, that's Blue just saying hi.
Hmm.
But other than that, you know, things are going well. Staying busy.
I was happy to hear you're busy, man.
Yeah.
Like, he looks really busy, too, which is great. So, for somebody that just started their own business and going off on their own, that's really exciting to see. So, cheers and congrats, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, thanks. It's been quite a process doing all the legal stuff and filing all the paperwork and trying to set time aside to, build up my stuff while doing the consultant thing. But it's fun. It's exciting stuff. But today we're going to do a slightly condensed version. So we're going to skip the market updates again today. But Ali, you wanted to kind of plug, you did a recent
podcast.
Yep. So we mentioned it on the last show, but since we missed the market update twice, just make sure you go to Cashflow Connections. And I think it's episode 38. It's "Will This Be the Longest Expansion in History?" So I was with Hunter Thompson, who runs that podcast, Cashflow Connections, and we did an hour long. We hit everything. We covered economics, we covered housing, and it was different markets and different strengths and different weaknesses. So a lot of cool stuff there if you're interested in learning more about the current state of the housing market and the economy. But we'll be back next time.
So as I mentioned earlier, went to Vegas to do a little research for today. And today we are discussing hotels.
How to count cards. What?
Yeah. When I was researching hotels, I didn't really realize it has kind of an interesting history. Hotels have gone through this sort of evolution. I don't know how familiar you guys are with it or have kind of recall seeing this evolution, but they've kind of gone through these different generations. First kind of phase was back in 1860. The first generation was 1860 to 1960 is kind of what they identify as like the first generation, and that was the Grand Hotel style. So it was really ornate, kind of opulent, and you know, for dignitaries mostly, and a lot of business deals were done there. And one of the interesting things I saw was George Washington, our president, our first president, he actually felt kind of not embarrassed, but he didn't want to give the appearance of favoritism or have the appearance of favoritism. So he opted to not stay in hotels, and he chose to stay in taverns and inns, which are like renovated bars basically, and you know, kind of grimy sort of environments.
That's a fun fact.
Yeah,
sounds like much on the tavern side hasn't changed in a while either.
Yeah. Yeah, so he was a man of not, I don't want to say low standards, but he didn't require much.
Which is weird, because Mount Vernon, have you been to his house in outside of DC?
I have not.
No, I mean, it's a big house, and yeah. He was definitely living the opulent life back then, just maybe not when it comes to hotels.
I guess the outward appearance is what he was trying to avoid. The second generation of hotels were considered more of a industrialized and kind of rigid system, and that was, you know, starting from 1960. And at that point, people really got into being very structured, you know, set in their ways as far as making hotels as efficient as possible. And there were two kind of innovations at that time, one being separating the business of the property from the business of tending to guests. They basically looked at their property as a business, and they utilized the growing credit market to leverage their existing hotels into branching out and getting more hotels. And then the second part of the innovation on that, they utilized contracts and franchising arrangements to basically use kind of local managers or investors to help grow that market. And then going back to that kind of structure part, that industrialization of it, there was a quote from J.W. Marriott Jr., who said, "When I say that the company's prosperity rests on such things as our 66 steps to a clean room manual, I'm not exaggerating." So they actually calculated 66 steps to get to for one point. And they had these crazy standard operating procedures. And this is ranging from Tokyo to Sao Paulo. The omelets in all of these locations had to match a laminated picture. One of the managers in Dubai says he follows 2,300 rules, including phrases to greet guests, how he has to answer the phone. That phone has to ring exactly three times before he answers. So it's like all these little things that they had to follow, and it was really structured, which obviously led to that pendulum swing coming into this third generation, which is what we see now, and you'll see it in Vegas. It's this more kind of laxed theme sort of setting. And they felt that, and it's kind of traced back to the 1980s in New York. His name was, or their name was Ian Schrager and Steve Rubell, who had previously run the Studio 54 nightclub. Okay. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with that club, but it was really big club where, you know, all the stars came.
Huge in the music scene and everything.
Yeah, it was a really iconic nightclub. And it was all about being seen and who was there to see. And when they got into the hotel game, they saw it as switching it to kind of a boutique hotel style. And that was, you know, following more to that theme. And it was about targeting customers based on their interests rather than their wallet.
Right.
So
right, trying to create the attraction.
Yeah, so you see that you end up with Circus, the Luxor, New York, sure. You know, Aria and that whole complex out there. So it's more about the style and what people are attracted to, and giving them this different setting every time they go to a different place. So, and it's still continuing to evolve as they move forward. But it's been a really interesting kind of transition of that history. So I don't know how you guys have seen or experienced hotels, if you've enjoyed this kind of theme setting, or have you been to kind of that more structured?
Well, I certainly don't travel as much as Allie does. I don't know where she tends to stay. I think we've all been to Vegas one too many times, so we can speak to that a little bit. I'd say for vacation stuff, I tend to stay more resort style things. We're big Marriott fans, actually. We stay at a lot of Marriotts and resort type Marriott places. But I haven't stayed anywhere that's like, outside of Vegas, like, been to New York, but it's a whole different type of deal when you're in New York. I mean, you've got your like 12 by 12 space there for $700 a night, you know? It's a little bit different. I don't know how good of an experience you can really call that. But the only one I can really draw to, the one that we stayed to in Canada, we went there, was gorgeous, which was right by the Niagara Falls, because the rooms were unbelievable. But
that's not really the hotel did anything. They just made sure you had enough.
It was the setting. They didn't. Yeah. Honestly, the hotel was kind of just like meh, you know, because the view and everything else was so wonderful.
Yeah, they don't need to.
Yeah, we didn't, you know, didn't do too much of that stuff. I know you and I were talking about the Hotel Del at one point, and the settings there, which are pretty cool, but I don't know if it's really targeted at, you know, our age group. I'd argue that it's gone the other direction, or it's been the other direction for so long, but it sounds like maybe they're trying to attract a little bit more at this
Hotel
point.
Hotel Del?
Del Coronado.
Del Coronado, San Diego. San Diego.
Yeah. Now, before I give my answer to that, serious question.
Yeah.
Okay, so I checked into my hotel in Charlotte 2 weeks ago, and I checked in like my business outfit, very professional, like my makeup's done, hair's done, all of this stuff. So... go there, then I go and get in the shower.
Completely unlike right now.
No, I get in the shower. When I get out of the shower, my hair is wet, my makeup, I don't have it on, I'm in workout clothes, and I go down. And he was like, the same gentleman was like, good evening, Mrs. Wolf. And I was like, good evening. And I'm like, I don't look the same, by the way. When my hair is wet, I look like I have brown hair. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Okay.
So my bona fide question is, do they know when you're leaving your room? Does it alert you that Mrs. Wolf has left room 405?
No, come on. I mean, you still look semi-similar.
No. I looked. There's like 6 stories in this hotel. So this hotel's big.
Okay, first off, you're paranoid of people like watching your every step. We already know this. So I think this is weighing into this discussion right now.
No.
Second off, I don't care if you got wet hair or not. Like, you can tell who people are.
No, you can't. No,
they don't. They don't. They can't.
I think they get alerted.
No.
And I am now convinced they know everywhere I'm going. They know what I'm buying.
Here we go.
For serious.
I'm pretty sure.
Allie, put on that really nice white jacket you have again.
With the really long sleeves.
Long sleeves and tie in the back,
All right, you guys. You know what? One day it's going to come out that they've been monitoring everything you've been doing, and I'm sorry you have not been concerned.
I've already
about
told
this.
You, they're monitoring everything we're doing as it is. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Anyways, I...
The new name for government is Alexa, or whatever the heck that... Alexa, or whatever Alexa, the...
Yeah.
So, I think the answer is, yes, they monitor you. And that's the only way that the gentleman remembered me a couple hours later.
The only thing they do is they know your phone when you call them. That's the only thing.
Yeah. So, if any of our listeners are in the hospitality business, please let me know. Do they know that I've left the room?
I think the answer is yes. I don't know about that.
To go back to your original question, I am the same. Actually, I don't do any resorts, but I don't. It's funny. My friend, I won't say what company he works for, but I happened to just run into him in a parking lot the other day, and we were talking about millennials and hospitality, and I said, what do you think about it? I said, do you think it's the experience? What would really set it apart for a young person? And he said, frankly, price. He said, Vegas, you expect the experience because that's where you are. But he said, he listens to all the earnings reports of Marriott and all of the big companies. And he said, it's such a price driven equation. But I can counter that by saying, I've looked at stats that the top places millennials will vacation are luxury resorts, all inclusive resorts.
Yeah, Mexico.
Yeah. So I guess maybe that adjusts for price.
I almost wonder if it's two different categories, right? So like, for instance, you're staying in, where are you going? Tampa?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going for business, right? Mm-hmm. So like I've got an overnight stay in Northern California, and I think I'm going to be in San Jose next week, Tuesday night. Well, I picked those places based off of truly what my experience was last time. Not like for ambiance and stuff, but like, was the room clean? Mm-hmm. Did I like the area? You know, those kind of things, like really simplified stuff when I'm just saying for business, right? Yeah. Did they have a decent like place to grab something to eat on the way out? Did they have a decent gym? Yep. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other thing I would look for, like simple amenities.
Yeah.
Or is it close in relation to a 24-hour fitness? You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing where I can go kind of keep some normalcy to my day. So I think if you split the two, like travel for work and then travel for pleasure, right? When we travel, like when we go to Hawaii every year, luckily. My kids know the difference in the amenities of the hotels. You know what I mean? They know I like these pools. I like this battleship that's out there. I like this and that. Or, you know, the access to the beach versus, you know, different types of things. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, like I'm not like a whole weighted on hand and foot type of deal, but my wife and I go to one resort in particular. We'll go once a year. We usually do it for our anniversary. It's the Monarch, I always do it wrong. Monarch Beach Club. So one of Dana Point, I think it was the old Regis, St. Regis. Mm-hmm. I mean, the place is off the chart with how they treat you and that kind of stuff. I mean, they knew it was our anniversary the first time I went. They send all the crap up to the room and all that kind
delivering
of stuff.
Delivering the wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and the grounds are amazing, you know, and it's like they come, you go down to the pool and not only do they like give you a towel and like water, it's like they set the towel down for you. They go find the spaces for you. Like they do all that kind of stuff. Cool. So, you know, it's the most bougie I'll ever be. But for the vacation part, I think it is about the actual experience. You know, like I said, I'll take it back to the business side or the travel side for business.
Which is 60% for most hotels, the average is at 60% business, 40% leisure, and then some go up to 70%. So it's business is actually a huge portion of a lot of the hotels that we stay in. But
Most people can't take a vacation.
Yeah.
So it has to be, right? So if you go back to what you were talking about before and the stats about, you know, how hotels were derived, it's because people were traveling and they needed to do different things. So that's why they stayed. So that's the commercialized aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
And then it became, as other people saw, you could probably start making money off it, just like any other topic or any other business. Other people are going, okay, well, I want to get in that game. And as you start getting in that game, it's like, how do I up it? Well, hello, Vegas, right? Yeah. Well, now we've got Aria, which is this huge freaking town and the whole, you know, city center or whatever the heck they call it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the Wynn was the big deal before. Well, the Wynn still is a big deal, and you'd rather stay there over Circus Circus. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, and the Luxor and all this, you know, looking at the pyramids, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it's like, as you keep getting the draw, what industry or what product, you know, category doesn't have to consistently one up to stay ahead of the rest of the market?
Yeah.
Right?
So on that front about kind of what's coming next, I found this article that they talked about four trends that are kind of taking over the hotel. And I think you had some as well, Ellie. Mm-hmm. The four that I found were small rooms. Mm-hmm. So to kind of fall in line with what people feel millennials want was this small rooms that makes way for more communal space for socializing and connecting with other people.
Well, maximizing that footprint, basically.
And what I've seen with small rooms is it's almost an entry point. So the way I've talked to hotel developers, they say, we want someone to fall in love with Hotel X, and we know that they can't afford it going at our normal price, so we're going to do small rooms, not necessarily to do the communal space, which I'm sure there are a lot that do that, but they said... So the Ace Hotel in downtown LA is an example. You can get their small room for $290. I picked a random day, but for $299 a month. Sorry, geez, a night. And then you go all the way up to the suite, which is $1,100 a night. And then you have about eight different sections as you go through that. Wow. Small, you know, medium, then large, extra large. You go through all these different things. And so for them, they said, the Ace says it's basically... You need to know that there are so many different people along the income spectrum and that you want people to come on your property. So you create small... for that small niche to have them come and enjoy the property.
Interesting.
From there on out.
Yeah. When you look at the percentage of how they divvy up a hotel, they actually break it down based on kind of what type of building it is and how they spread out, you know, the amount of rooms that they're going to do. So for a motel or economy hotel, the percentage of total hotel area is 90% to those guest rooms. And then at an all-suite hotel, and it's as you get kind of more grand, your percentage of guest rooms decreases.
Goes down, yeah.
Yeah, so then you end up with more amenities, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all-suite hotels, you got 80% guest rooms, urban business hotel, 75%, resort, 70%, and then convention hotel, you get down to 65%.
And for economy, have you guys stayed in a Fairfield Inn Suites?
Say it again. Fairfield?
Yep.
Yeah, I've stayed at one before.
Would you stay in one again?
I don't think it's so bad. I tend to prefer like Courtyard. Like I said, I'm a Marriott guy.
Yep.
And I think Fairfield's from Hilton.
I don't think it. I think it's Marriott.
Anyways, so the reason I'm saying that is they never have, they don't, well, the ones I've been into don't have a built-in air conditioner. They just have the window air.
Yeah.
I will never stay in one
and
again.
And that's the kind of things, like, that I'm saying, like, you look for, you know what I mean, when you're going to go and stay. It's what did that, was it ready for me? Was it clean? Yeah. You know, is it a good AC system? You know, different stuff like that. Yeah. You know, the bathroom, how's the bathroom look? You know, so those different types of things. Yeah.
All right. So number two.
Eliminating and combining. So they're actually removing some of the things that you get in a guest room or combining them into one sort of thing. So they looked at combining a closet, a mini bar, and dresser all into one unit.
Oh, yeah.
So you start to see some of those kind of things. And then they're eliminating things like the irons and ironing boards in lieu of providing an ironing room that multiple guests.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this is the Moxie Hotel. This is a boutique hotel. I don't have the exact location, but it's called the Moxie, M-O-X-Y. And then they're trying to deconstruct guest rooms. And they're kind of toying with the idea of having this open plan. So you're removing walls from your bathroom. So you have this open kind of space.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. So for those that...
It's starting to sound like a dorm.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out. Number three is modular construction. Talked about that a little bit in our off-site construction episode. Allie, you brought up, I can't remember which hotel you mentioned.
Yeah, so Marriott in 2017 did 50 of their hotels prefab, 13% of their portfolio for 2017.
Oh, yeah.
And so for them, they won't do it on their high end. So you weren't going to go, I don't know what the high end Marriott would be. But you wouldn't go to one of those. It would be a Fairfield, would be that. So they just make it like Legos. So just little boxes putting on top of each other.
I mean, it makes perfect sense because for the most part, that person is coming. It's like, I need a room to crash, get up and go. You're not generally sitting in there going, hey, what kind of pool does it have? And this type of stuff. I mean.
Yeah. So I can't remember the exact number. I think it was something like it used to take them 14 weeks and it dropped it down to 10 weeks. So they got most of it in the time savings versus the fact that it's cheaper to do prefab.
And then the last one is home. It's called home sharing. So they're trying to get inspiration from Airbnb.
Like the VRBO type stuff?
Sort of. So they're trying to draw from that and looking to cut costs by doing, I guess the best way to explain is kind of doing things that we normally experience in everyday life. So instead of having an actual restaurant in the hotel, they're partnering up with food trucks that'll come to the facility. And different things. They're trying to come up with creative ways to basically cut costs and bring in a new kind of flavor to the hotel.
So I was just going to hit on the food trucks. I've seen recently a lot of the mixed-use spaces where they're doing kind of residential and office and hotels. They're leaving space intentionally for food trucks.
Yeah.
And part of me wonders...
How long is that going to last, right? Yeah, what kind of
is that a long-term plan or is that...
As in, like, are food trucks kind of just trendy? Or
That's how. I was like, that's an interesting use of space, because I wonder if they could have been more...
I mean, I guess essentially that space would be easily convertible then later.
Sure, but I don't know. I feel like that feels like a trendy way to set up your development, in my opinion.
Well, I think being in the construction industry, I'm hesitant to eat off anything on a truck, for the most part. I've kind of been, you know, dealt with that before, so I can't say I necessarily go off of food trucks anyway, but...
So, and was that number four?
Yeah, that was four.
So the one I would add to that is customization. And so we've talked about how, I don't know if we have on this podcast, but how millennials have grown up with every facet of their life being customizable. So not the first group to grow up with Chipotle, but they go to Chipotle and expect to get a vegetarian salad next to beef burrito. And they've always expected that. Or Nike, you can create your own shoes. This is an extreme example. So of course we don't expect all the hotels to go this way, but in Switzerland, there's a hotel that has 150 different customizable options that once you book it, you go onto their website and you say, they do really funky kind of fun things like, I want Bart Simpson toilet paper and I want to have a soft pillow and I want a fluffy blanket and plus my baby's going to be there so I need a baby bed. Yeah. And so you can go through and click through all these different options, but they do a mix of customization and the delivering the wow, which is the Ritz's idea. And so when you walk into your room, the sink is filled and they have a little rubber ducky sitting waiting for you. So just like a little like, oh, that's delightful. So what we've seen is hotels are trying to figure out the best way to still be cost effective while also hitting on the fact that young people expect customization more than the older generations do.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I don't know how it will take off, but it's been something they've been talking about.
Yeah, it seems like they're not grasping at straws, but really trying to figure out what that new formula is.
Yep.
I was going to mention Airbnb just launched. They don't want to call it a hotel, but it's a hotel. It's called the Yoshino Cedar House, and this is in Japan. It's a house that's managed by and for the community. The property would function as a hotel for tourists and a community center for local residents. And 97% of the fees that are charged go directly to the community. This is a project co-created by Tokyo-based architect Go Hasegawa and Airbnb co-founder Joe Gabia. The goal of the project was to explore how architecture can promote new relationships between hosts and guests beyond existing notions of domesticity and ownership. This building was built with wood from nearby forests using local master carpenters and craftsmen, and they're really careful about managing how they harvested that wood and made sure that they were responsible in harvesting that wood. It holds a maximum of 4 occupants. It's pretty small. If you look at the photos, you'll see there's kind of a dining space, small bedrooms. The rooms are kind of odd shaped in that they take the form of the house or the building. The main floor is kind of just circulation and that dining space and communal space. It has this really cool suspended wood staircase that leads up to the lofted bedrooms. And then once you get upstairs, it looks like that's where the bedrooms are, but they follow the form of the roof. So you have these sloped ceilings, kind of a low space.
That is cool.
So it's a really interesting kind of setup. And you can register for this on Airbnb for only $97 per night. I don't know. Would you stay in something like that, Jason?
No, I don't really think I would, actually. I mean, it's cool. Like, when you look at stuff artistically, I think it's something I would take a look at. I think it'd be pretty neat. I can appreciate it.
Yeah.
From an architecture standpoint, from a building standpoint, and just being different. But I don't think I would stay there.
It's interesting to me because I look at, all the elements that you kind of think about when you design a hotel. And this is like completely the antithesis of what you would normally consider. If you kind of look through their website, this is all about kind of a cultural experience and being one with that environment and that culture, that region. But I wanted to wrap up with 5 facts for hotels.
Could be interesting.
I found kind of interesting. Largest capacity hotel is obviously in Las Vegas. It's the MGM Grand. MGM Grand is 3rd largest hotel in the world with 5,690 rooms.
Wow.
The tallest hotel, standing 1,389 feet tall, is the Trump International Hotel and Tower in Chicago, 92 stories high.
Crazy.
The first hotel and brand, the first establishment that was called a hotel in the United States was built in 1793, and that was the Union Public Hotel in Washington, D.C. Washington probably didn't stay there.
Yeah, I doubt it. The question I have with the Trump one is 92 stories high.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks about it. Does that include the non-13th floor? Because there's never a floor 13 in a hotel.
Yeah.
So is it really 91, or is it like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the people on floor 14, they know what floor they're on. I don't care what anybody said.
Get rid of that?
There's no floor 13 in any hotel that I've ever been in.
I haven't paid any attention to that.
Oh, pay attention to it. But the funny part is, like I said, if you're on floor 14, you know you're on 13. I don't care what anybody says.
Average room rate then and now, according to American Hotel and Lodging Association, in 1940, the average hotel room rate was just $3.21.
That sounds good.
And today the average rate has reached $110.89.
$3.21 is what you probably walked out of your Las Vegas stay hotel in.
And then the last one, the number of hotel employees then and now. In 1910, hotel industry was made up of 10,000 hotels, 1 million rooms, and roughly 300,000 employees. At the year end of 2012, there were 52,529 hotels, 4.9 million rooms, and the hotel industry has employed 1.8 million people.
Jeez.
Six times as much as in 1910.
That's crazy.
Yeah, the hotel industry is an interesting one that we can probably come back to and dive into and focus on a few more specific hotels at a future date. But I think we'll wrap today up. One last thing I just remembered. For our contest, we had a couple people, for our photo contest, we had a couple people participate.
Sweet.
The end date was supposed to be sometime soon. I think we passed it. But I forgot to make an announcement last time, so I wanted to make that last announcement, and we'll make an announcement next week of who wins that $100 gift card. Again, if you haven't heard, we're doing a photo contest, a social media photo contest. So take a interesting photo of yourself and post it on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook and hashtag Spaces Podcast so we can find it. And then the more likes you get and more shares you get, the more your photo counts into the raffle. And we'll make that announcement by the next episode.
Cool.
I wanted to end with some listener mail. And this one comes from our Instagram. And this is JDavids11. I said, much appreciated. Finally checked out your podcast a couple of days ago out of curiosity. I'm only 5 episodes in, but I'm really enjoying the content so far. It's cool to hear some different perspectives on topics from people in other focuses of the building industry and in other regions of the country. Thanks for putting some quality stuff out there and keep at it, so I'll have something interesting to listen to on the drive to work. Thank you, JDavids11.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
If you would like to send us some mail, you can send that via email, Instagram, Twitter. We're out there everywhere. So you can send that email to hello@spacespodcast.com. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/spacespodcast. On Twitter, @spacespodcast. On Instagram, instagram.com/spacespodcast. Or on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/spaces-podcast. And lastly, we know there are tons of podcast options out there, and we appreciate you guys spending some time with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and like it. Don't just share it on your social media. Actually, send it directly to a person. They're more likely to open it if you send it directly to them. Your support is the only way that this grows. And if you stumbled upon the show, please subscribe so you don't miss another episode. Don't forget to check us out on spacespodcast.com. And under the Listen tab, you'll see photos and notes of things that we've talked about in this episode and previous episodes. And with all that said, if you're catching up, hit next. Or if you're listening as we put these out, we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks.
Calling all AEC professionals. Get ready for unparalleled professional insights with detailed and original podcasts by RCAT. This is the podcast that brings you the untold stories and lessons learned behind the design and delivery of a building project. Hey, it's Charisse Lakeside, aka the CSI Kraken, and your host. Join me as we dive deep into the tales of conflict, triumph, and sheer ingenuity.
Yeah, so when Serena was named for the, it was going to be named for the building, you know, we really were able to work with teams at Nike Branding and how to really infuse her influence and identity in the very public spaces.
Detailed features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who spill the beans on the most complex, interesting, and downright odd building conditions they've encountered.
Another challenge of the shuttle is actually putting it in launch position is how you brace that seismically. It's really supported by only two pins at the base of the booster rockets. And there's a large base isolator that's underneath the shuttle that kind of prevents it from moving too much in an earthquake.
When you have 600 people or 300 people in a room, acoustically, you really need a high floor to floor so that you can have the right acoustic environment for people to be able to talk and that speech intelligibility is really good.
Every episode unveils lessons learned and connects you to the products you need to navigate similar challenges. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Detailed today and be prepared for the unexpected on your next project. Every building has a story, and we are here to tell it.